Good morning. I'd like to congratulate all of y'all for finding your way here. We were a little anxious waiting for you, so thank you for coming. My colleague, Dr. Likens, is passing out some handouts, so we're going to be a little bit high-tech and low-tech this morning. I'm going to begin by doing something that's not on my PowerPoint and that my co-speakers here did not expect, but I'm going to do it anyway. This presentation comes out of dissertation research, and this dissertation would not have been possible without the organizations that my co-speakers represent. Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, Marin Institute, the Center for Alcohol Marketing and Youth, all of those organizations mentored me and supported me and made it possible, educated me, because prior to their intervention, I was on the other side. I was contributing to their data. So they brought me out and really helped me. And so I'd like to thank you guys and those organizations. This just gives you a little bit of contact information. This research began in Texas, and a couple of years ago I moved to California. So now I'm currently at Cal State Fullerton, but my colleague who's going to help me here in a moment is still based in Texas. So we are on the extreme ends. You notice that Texas was one of the states on the slide that is totally resistant to regulation. California is doing just a little bit better, so I get to see some things on both ends of the spectrum. This research started out, and I had to identify, alcohol is so very, very complex. So while I thank these people for helping me to break into the alcohol industry, when I started on my research, I didn't know what to thank them or to start running really fast, because there are so many variables. So what I wanted to look at was the effect of advertising on alcohol use. Advertising is very difficult to conceptualize, and I had a really big problem doing it. So I went in and I looked at all the variables that were related to alcohol use, and as you can see, advertising was right there on the top. We have all the social factors, biological factors, and parental influence, situational factors, of course, economic instability, social injustice, and then religion. You'll see a couple of these arrows are double arrows, the religion and the parental influence. These things can also work as protective factors against alcohol use. So when I started my research, again, I had to look at the protective factors as well as the things that were probably contributing to alcohol use. And my main focus, again, was the advertising. So today, we're going to look at a summary of what came out of my dissertation research, and that is the paper that my colleague just passed out. I wasn't able to get that in a digital format, so again, we have the low-tech thing for you to look at. This is a secondary data analysis. It comes from the General Social Survey, and if you're not familiar with that, I'll just quickly give you some background. These are personal interviews. The General Social Survey has been around since the 70s. They do very good research. It's a very reliable data source. So in order to get data on all those variables that I showed you in the last slide, again, that was very difficult. There's not one database that has all of those variables in one set, but we were able to find it in the General Social Survey. Again, that survey, we have replication. It's full probability sampling. The unit of analysis is the individual, so we are actually getting feedback from individuals. It's been around since the 70s, but like anything that's been around that long, they've had their ups and downs. They've had some funding crises and things like that, and that affects their ability to collect some of the data. The data that we were particularly interested in was the alcohol use, and because of funding issues, the General Social Survey had stopped collecting data on alcohol use. So we were limited in my research to looking at individuals up to 1994. The dissertation was completed in 2005. We used a lot of, the general social survey was very complex, so we had to do a lot of different things just to try to clean up the data and get it into an analyzable form. And again, this is when I started saying, oh, what have these guys gotten me into? We had to do some data reduction. We did some correlation analysis, factor analysis. We did some descriptive statistics, regression analysis, and finally, some path analysis, because we felt like that there were some mediators. The road from alcohol to drinking to subsequent health problems and everything else that comes, it's not a straight path. So we had to try to find out what are the protective things and all the other mediators. So the low-tech part of the analysis begins now, and you have that in your hand. What you have is the path analysis that shows you what we found as a part of the dissertation. The shaded arrows represent significant effects. Now, I'm not going to go through the whole thing, but I'll be very happy to take questions at the end. But the shaded arrows are something that you can see if you're looking at the first page. We were looking at the effects of, since we could not find advertising, we could not operationalize advertising itself. So we had a proxy variable, which was media, and that was supposed to, we wanted that to give us some information about advertising. The media variables that we looked at was watching television and reading the newspaper. And then we also looked at religiosity as a mediator. So in the first diagram that you can see all of the variables that had a significant effect on watching television, our religiosity, which we operationalized as church attendance or our religious affiliation, and then we have alcohol use. So you have four pages there. Two pages, the final thing that we're looking at is alcohol use. The last two pages, we were looking at alcohol abuse. And so looking at those these pages, we can see that watching television had a significant effect on alcohol use, but this effect was only seen in the absence of religiosity. And again, religiosity being operationalized as religious affiliation or church attendance. So, and we use watching television because if you're watching TV, you're going to see some commercials unless you're TiVoing or doing something different. But you're going to see some commercials. So we said these people are going to be exposed to advertising, and we quantified that. Then we looked at the second page, our second media, again, as proxy for advertising was reading the newspaper. And again, that did not have a significant effect on alcohol use as we saw in television. The third page and the fourth page are the alcohol abuse models that we came up with. And again, you can see with the shaded arrows things that had significant direct and indirect effects on alcohol use and again, alcohol abuse. And I will answer more questions on those later if you have them. So again, those are the final models that we came up with as a result of the dissertation. And so some of the policy implications that we had, our hypothesis was that race would have an effect, as well as social variables and as well as media. So all of those things that you saw in the first circular diagram, we had hypotheses for them that all of these things would have an effect. But what we found out was that race did not have a significant effect, and this coincides with other research from individuals like Joel Gruby and Denise Hurd. All those guys have looked at these things, and they said that it's not just a matter of race. There must be some other social factors that are involved. So we were happy somewhat that we weren't totally off track, that we were in agreement with some people who had been doing this forever. Media exposure, as I said before, had a significant total effect on alcohol consumption, but this effect was only in the absence of religiosity, and again, we felt that that held a good implication for faith-based programs. So data used for this study, again, I told you, was collected in 1972, but we found that this was not going to give us information. We went from 72 to 94, and then we had the explosion of the internet, and we didn't know what to do with it. So what we have did not address the changing trends in media and advertising, each thing we did, we had the variable year. So we were able to see that the year had a significant effect on our results. So that being taken into account, we felt like we needed to continue to look at this as time permitted and as the years progressed. And that's what we've done here with this update. So what you have, what you currently have in hand is published research, and you can look at the whole thing in the Journal of Substance Abuse. So we extended it a little bit further, and we're going to talk to you about the new results that we found. The limitations that in the beginning was the individual tendencies. People don't tell you how much they're drinking. And again, the sample, the general social survey, does the lowest age is 18. It begins at 18 and it goes on into like 80 or 90 or so. So we don't have those little young kids. We don't have the 13, 14, and 15 years old. And we know that people who start drinking that young are usually the one who end up having the major health problems. We also had the measurement error that we have anytime we use survey data. So those are the things that we found in the beginning. So having all of that in mind, we say, where do we go from here? In 2005, we started asking ourselves, what is our future research? We needed to look at media changes over time. We needed to look at women, because my dissertation research, we were only looking at men. And then we also needed to look at regions. Again, I'm originally from Texas. Now I'm in California. Totally different. Came to California, alcohol everywhere. You know, just drink. Texas, no limits. You know, I could even buy alcohol on Sunday, and that really shocked me because I couldn't do that in Texas. So there are regional differences. And we need more research regarding these regional differences. We needed more research regarding urban and rural things, and then access to media. We also needed to look at the role of electronic media. In 1995, we knew the alcohol industry was spending huge amounts of money on electronic media. They were spending $736 million, so big I can't even pronounce it. And 88% of that was on electronic media. So we knew we needed to look at that at some point in time. So we did look at it. And now my colleague, Dr. Likens, is going to tell you what we found. I'm going to tell you a little bit more. She doesn't want to talk to you right now. Okay. But what she did, she went back and she did some more recent review of literature. And as you can see, based on that, childhood alcohol abuse and adult sexual harassment were associated with problem drinking in women, and with PTSD and depression serving as mediators in this association. We also found that adolescent drinking at age 16 increased the likelihood of adult drinking, heavy drinking in women, and serving as a mediator between childhood externalizing behaviors and adult alcohol use. Again, doing the research on what's going on with women up to now, changes in religious participation were associated with increased rates of alcohol abuse or dependence. Stable patterns of religious participation were protective factors. Again, that was something we found in our 2005 dissertation research. Social networking and individual drinking norms were associated with moderate drinking among women. Neighborhood drunkenness norms were associated with binge drinking. Then we have the gender gap for problem drinking. In 2005, we looked at the males, but we're finding that the women, as you know, and as we're doing in many other areas, we're catching up. We're catching up even when we don't need to be catching up. We have the environmental factors. Both family and individuals were associated with the use of alcohol in a twin study that was done in 2007. And then with respect to preconception, and some of my colleagues here have spoken to that issue about the OBGYN issues and pregnancy, with respect to preconception, maternal behaviors and experiences, 50.1% of women participating in the pregnancy risk assessment monitoring system admitted to alcohol use. And alcohol use within 3 months of pregnancy was common, again, in another study. So we went back. We did one study, the men's study, in 2005. We went back and we looked at the women. And General Social Survey, again, was very obliging because their latest research has a module on alcohol, strictly alcohol and women, and they also had a module on the internet or the information society, and so that was just wonderful. So we went back and looked at that. Now my colleague is going to tell you what we found when we looked at that.
We only have 1 minute?
Okay. 1 minute?
Okay. Why don't I then cut through, this is preliminary. Let's see. We did look at region. We looked at black and white. We didn't have a very large black sample on this. The media variables was, for the women's, was the use of the internet and some data on that. What I want to, we also looked at, because we found the significance before on the religiosity. I'll skip through some of that. We looked at two possible models, one of predicting monthly alcohol use and the other one of weekly. We had a larger sample size for the monthly use. If you look into that, we found that income was actually higher, had a negative correlation. Race, we found among women, the black women were using alcohol less in these predictive models. Associated with higher education, more use. And that use went down over as age increases. We did not find anything significant in the monthly results for religious affiliation or internet use. However, and this is the predictor of weekly use, again, the income only comes up in that one, but we were using religious affiliation on that one. It was also, if you'll notice, not a very well-fit model. Going back, we changed the variable we were looking for religiosity to attendance rather than religious affiliation, and then did find this protective factor and strong one again. Also, as the number of children goes up, the use of alcohol goes down, and income fades away on that one. Weekly use income is still there, but again, this religious attendance is a predictive factor. We have not yet seen any internet use significance. This is preliminary analysis we haven't even submitted yet for, so we may be looking at a little bit more complex models as well for mediation effect, because that's what we found, where we found the media in the early analysis. So, okay.
And one final thing before we end here, you want to know what all this means. Okay, going back to what my colleagues have said, young, white, low-income, educated females with no children are drinking significantly more than black females. And I said possibly this must be college students, because where else can you be educated and poor except in college? So low-income and education implies you're in college. So you know, hopefully I've given you a quick overview, and I've run out of time, so if you have any questions, I'll be happy to take those.
Regretfully, we Thank only you. Have time for only one question, if there is one. There is one, quickly.
On the newspaper variable, were you able to distinguish the type of newspapers? So, for example, were African-American newspapers versus general market?
No, we weren't.
Thank you very much.